The following is a presentation of Stewed Productions. It's time for a deep dive with the craft beer classics that made you fall in love back in the day. It's a refresher course on the best beers of all time. This is Interbrews, Required Drinking. Now here are your hosts, Keenan Zarling and Josh Stewart.
That's an intro. We're official. We're official. That's just it. Welcome, everybody, to Interbrews Required Drinking. We are back for episode 2. You thought it wouldn't last, or maybe you did. We're just that stubborn. Keenan?
Yeah, you know it. Nope, just no giving up.
No,
there's brakes on the train.
No, there's not. Just keep it, because, it would be worse if we stopped. Anyway, I'm Josh Stewart. He's Keenan.
Yeah. Keenan Zarling. I am Keenan Zarling. I am a professional evening drinker.
Mm. You are one of the best.
And there is. So I am absolutely pumped to be talking about this beer tonight, because this is one of my I don't know, I was about to say top five beers, but you know, I might go off on an edge ledge and just say, you know what, top five beers, because this is definitely one of the beers that got me into craft beer, and it holds a really holds a spot in my heart, and it's earned it. It deserves it, certainly. And so what we're talking about today is Live Oak Brewing Company's Hefeweizen, the OG Hefeweizen of Central Texas.
Yeah, it's, you know, old Mount Rushmore has been in the news lately for other reasons. It's obvious if you've been paying attention, but it's, because it's 2020. And but Mount Rushmore has always been one of those things. Like, what are your Mount Rushmore beers? So your top, like the four, the classics, the things that really have, like, you want to build them. Like, if you had to carve a mountain in the middle of a state you'll probably never visit, because it's way up there and way up there. But if you were going to take a mountain and carve beers into the side of it, what would they be? And I'm with you. For me, Live Oak Hefeweizen, for me, it's one of those beers.
Yeah. And so what I mean, there's a lot to love about this beer. And so, remind me, where did you go to college?
Well, I was enrolled at, I was enrolled at Arkansas State Jonesboro, Arkansas. Attendance, it's a little fuzzy.
Well, I'm sure the memories that you have are so good. Uh-huh. I went to college in Austin and, came of age and started really exploring the craft beer world in Austin. And this was, late aughts, going to date myself there a little bit. Live Oak Hefeweizen was one of those beers that it was draft only for like the first 15 years, 17 years of its existence or something like that. Mm-hmm. It was a beer that you only got to experience. You only got to, get into, if you were physically in a bar. So as an underage drinker, somebody that was getting into, craft beer, because that's right, I was a criminal at a time. getting into craft beer and exploring the beer world, it was something that was totally not even on your radar until you physically were stepping into a bar. Live Oak Brewing Company was something that it was just always there. Like, their beers were always on tap in Austin. And it wasn't until later when I was professionally brewing, that I realized, like, holy cow, these guys have been around since 97. Mm-hmm. Like, they are granddaddies in the Texas brewing scene.
I don't know what when I'm thinking Texas, I obviously St. Arnold, is the oldest of the still around craft brewers, right? There were brewers way back in the day, but and then I think Real Ale maybe right after that, but then Live Oak,
there's a handful that have been around. Mm. that, you know, were opened before 2000. I believe, like, I think Independence is 99. Mm-hmm. And now I'm sure we're going to get a bunch of nerds writing in. It's like, you said this brewery opened up. But this, like, I don't know. But, like, they're few and far between. Very few breweries in Texas that can stand up proudly and say, oh, yeah, I've been around for 20 years.
Yeah.
Like, that's a huge milestone. And Live Oak Brewing Company, so they're a conundrum in my mind, in the professional scene, because they do their wheelhouse and they just do it well, and it's kind of unapologetic. Mm-hmm. They do pilsners, they do, you know, continental style, like, you know, ales and lagers, and they, you know, they got an IPA because they have to, and
that is one of those ones where it's like, IPA. I mean, I'm sure it's good, because I mean, I know Chip, and I know, yeah, I know the approach that Live Oak takes to their beers. So I'm like, oh, yeah, that's probably a good beer, but I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and so to a certain degree, that's one of the reasons why I find myself gravitating back to this beer and to, because this is what I think one of the beers they opened with, you know, I come back to Live Oak Brewing Company, and whenever I'm in Austin, I'll kind of gravitate towards them, is because they've sort of stuck to those roots of, and, you know, they still find ways to innovate. They do some collaborations with Jester King and with other breweries in Central Texas. Sorry, my cat is like in. He's just like, you're sitting down. It's time to love me.
Well, he reached up and opened the door. Like, he didn't see it right as we were starting. He reached up. He had the handle. He kind of tap danced into the room there with you.
And I was, yeah, like, to be fair, this is his room. So, but all right, I gotta pick the cat up because otherwise he's gonna just bother us the whole time. That's cool. But anyway, so the damn cat. But they've stuck in their wheelhouse for better or for worse. And they were draft only again, for 15, 17 years, until they finally moved into their new facility and just, you know, dropped a ton of cash and got a packaging line. Yeah. But even to that point, their packaging in my mind is one of the sharpest, it's just good, sharp packaging on the shelf.
Yeah. It's clean. You know, it's them with that. It's something about that yellow band at the top there.
Yeah.
On all their beers. And it's like, yep, that's going to be good.
Yeah. And even like, again, on like on a professional level, like the six packs are their six pack cartons as opposed to the rings. There's like a whole bunch of stuff that they're just doing right.
Yeah.
And in an industry that's a whole lot of like, man, we got to push out, you know, push out something new and exciting. Like, what's the sexiest thing? We got to find a way to sell a four pack for $20 or whatever. They're still rolling in it's good, solid beer. Mm-hmm. We've been doing it this way for 20 years. Don't really need to go crazy on stuff.
Yeah.
And it shows.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. It's something about, like, I love IPAs. I love sours. I love all the innovative stuff, like, or, you know, or just the crazy off the wall stuff. Right. But you just can't beat clean and just classic and German. it's German styles. They're so good.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that, I was watching an interview that Chip did a while back in it he's they're talking about like their roots in home brewing and like getting started, and man, in like all of these styles, while they're not necessarily the sexiest, like they're not, you know, if you try to launch a craft brewery in Texas with these, you know, with this wheelhouse right now, you might struggle.
Yeah.
because it's not flashy, but 20 years ago, these were just like, man, this is just good, refreshing, approachable beer. Mm-hmm. And so like Live Oak Hefeweizen is, it's everything that macro, you know, macro or super flashy beer, all of, you know, really hoppy stuff isn't. It ain't bright. I mean, it's got decent clarity on it, but I mean, it's definitely got a little bit of haze. Mm-hmm. It's got great ester aroma on it. So, I mean, it's like on the package, it straight up says like, yeah, you know, it's got a, you know, banana clove and some hints of vanilla. And I'm like, yeah, no, that's 100% what you get.
Yep.
The body is really light. It's just like refreshing to a T. Like the beautiful thing is, and I look at, and the head just boof, yep, like perfecto. And the beautiful thing is, we were talking about this a little bit with Saison DuPont last time. This is a beer that you can dress up or dress down. Mm-hmm. Like this can be your lawnmower beer where like, yeah, Saison DuPont is like 6% plus. This guy's like 5% change. Mm-hmm. Like, man, this can be your lawnmower beer. This could be your like just evening beer with dinner. Take it to a barbecue. Yep. You can have this at a wedding. Like it just, and that's kind of what good beer should be able to do.
It's like the style. And to me, when it comes to the style of Hefeweizen, everybody's like, what's a, you know, like when I talk to newer into beer people and the word Hefeweizen comes up, like, what is that? And I was like, well, it's a wheat beer and it's yeast driven and bananas and cloves and things like that. But I could talk to you all day about it. I could tell you exactly what the textbook thing is, but grab a Live Oak Hefeweizen, because not everybody loves Hefeweizen. I have met too many people that do not like it. And it's like, so I know now that there are categories, there are people that love it, and there are people that it is not their thing at all. It is my thing. I love Hefeweizen. But I'm like, if you want to know what a Hefeweizen should be, Live Oak.
Yeah.
And then start there.
Yeah, just absolutely. And it's a, like, and again, that was the, when I was in college and like kind of really discovering craft beer, you know, you kind of had this issue of like, oh yeah, you want to go, you know, discover styles. Like you're reading books about styles, like going through like Michael Jackson, you know, tomes of like, look at all the different beers of the world.
Yeah.
And you get to Hefeweizen and it's like, oh shoot. Like, can I drink this? Can I, you know, where can I find this style? Uh-huh. And it's just like, oh yeah, brewery down the street makes one. And you do a little research. And it's like, actually it's really good. Like not just did it taste good, but it's representative of the style. And having traveled in Germany and consumed way too many Hefeweizen, holy cow. Like I can tell you Live Oak Hefeweizen is the real deal.
Yeah.
And that's something that, you know, I wonder sometimes about like styles that are, you know, I oftentimes think of beer styles in regards to like dog breeds. Like there's the BJCP, like here's what we judge, you know, some bunch of people in their ivory towers sit down and say a perfect Hefeweizen tastes like this, and a perfect, you know, Rauch beer should taste like this, and a perfect IPA should be just so. And kind of like with dog breeds, someone sits down and says, this is what a German Shepherd should look like. And there was a period of time in beer where everyone was striving to fit those categories. Mm. And I don't know when it was, if it was, I realize I'm kind of getting old man yells at cloud like level here, but I think it was like, you know, sometime in the last like 5-10 years, I think that the collective beer zeitgeist got away from what should a style be. Mm. And just focusing instead on like, hey, what's exciting, what tastes good, whatever. Yeah. And Live Oak Hefeweizen is sort of a relic, and I mean that in the best way possible, but it's sort of a relic of a time when being true to style was a badge of honor. Mm-hmm.
Agreed. Now, I don't have the technical expertise that you have, and I want you to, as you put your nose in, both proper glassware tonight. We both have our Hefeweizen glasses.
I felt it was worth getting it out for.
Yes, I have a whole set of these because I'm a long table away in my backyard from having my own German beer garden, and being in Germany or being German. Yeah. But other than that, I've got the glasses and I've got the beer and a backyard. Now I'll just wait until it's not 1,000 degrees anymore.
Yeah, get the weather too, and then
then
you're in business.
This is the perfect. This is like the May in Houston of beers. Like the heat hadn't hit all the way yet, but the sunshine is just there. Like it's sunshine. It's like hazy sunshine, like with our smog and our humidity. The way the sky looks at a sunset is in May. Because you can't go out there now because you'll burst into flames. But
no, it was awful.
Hefeweizen, like in May, April, May. And I want you to get into the technical side of it, but I can tell you that going out to Live Oak, their new location. So their old location was really interesting. It was, they had to like crawl through rafters to add hops. And it was very tight quarters. It was not one of those places that you really, put on your list of, you wanted to try the beers. You wanted to be in Austin, especially early aughts and that before Austin's lost a little bit of its cool. It's become a little too shiny and techy.
Yeah.
And
it's like shiny cool instead of grungy cool.
Yeah.
I don't know. I am not an expert in cool.
No.
Well, I hate to break it to you.
And now that we can't go anywhere, maybe it'll get, whatever. But anyway, going out to Live Oak, the brewery now out by the airport. If you're flying, if you're seeing this on our video or listening to the podcast and you're flying into Austin for whatever reason, South by Southwest, years from now when that is a thing again, or if you're a entrepreneur trying to start your tech company or, vitamin company or whatever it is you're trying to do in Austin because you can't live on the coast anymore because it's just gotten too nutty. And so now you've come to your senses and moved to the great state of Texas, but Austin is your place because everybody else does it. So why not you? When you fly into Austin and by the airport there, you drive through a neighborhood where you're like, I'm not sure. But then once you get to the brewery, it is a beautiful facility. And lo and behold, Chip and the whole team in their wisdom got a place with lots of Live Oaks. And it's like, there's multiple layers. It's very odd. Just the landscape is Austin. There's big, big trees. You can't beat big Live Oak trees with the way they just kind of reach out and say like, I have a beer under me and I'm going to hug you with my shade. And the long tables and then the tap room inside, there's these big long tables. You'll make friends. They give you a big tall glass of Hefeweizen. Sometimes they have the smoked version of their Hefeweizen. Chip's a big fan of smoked beers.
Yeah.
That's some good stuff. Most of the time, there's going to be some good food out there and stuff.
Yeah, and I'll admit, I have not had any of the Rauch beers that Live Oak's made. If there's anybody in Texas that makes a good Rauch beer, I'm sure it's Live Oak.
Yeah. Are you a fan of smoke? Because, like I said, some people are fans of Hefeweizen, and some people, it's not.
Yeah, that I'm about to put on my like my snooty like I wish I had a monocle because I would put it on just right now and be like I've had the pleasure of having Rauch beers in Bamberg, like where the style originates and where it's just like, oh yeah, this is just the like this is the local beer. Mm-hmm. And they're phenomenal. I had a smoked Märzen once there, and in my inebriated wisdom, like sat down, like opened up a little journal, and I started like just taking notes on it, just like, okay, what's this taste like? Was it? And I'm full disclosure, drunk, and And I had a couple of notes in there that were ultimately, I just kind of circled it. It was like, it's like iced tea. Like the level of smoke just adds a added a little bit of astringency and balanced some of the sweetness and added a bit of depth, much in the way that just good, strong iced tea can. And I found myself going like, holy cow, this is something that needs to be in Texas. And so I have also had a lot of garbage Rauch beers in Texas, where, you know, people are taking the, like, the heavy handed, like, craft beer approach of just like, well, it says it's a smoke beer. It's got to taste like smoke or otherwise people are going to be disappointed. So here's the liquid smoke, dog. Yeah. Like, and that's, those have all been really sad, but someday I'd love to try Live Oak's, smoke beers.
Yeah. They have their, Rauch Fest, and talking to Chip, I keep name dropping, but he's been on the podcast. He's been on Liquid Lunch. He's been on Interbrews. Yeah. He came out to the Renaissance Festival last year and it got rowdy, but he's one of the nicest guys, just, and you can tell he just loves his beers. That's the thing.
Like,
when you start talking to him about smoked beers, you see the joy, and that's the approach you need for smoke. 'Cause you need somebody that loves them and know, they don't just need liquid smoke. I think you have to be in a place of love to really develop a good, like, to know, like, where's the line? Where does it really complement what we've already got going on in this Hefeweizen, just to make it a little bit more, you know? I don't know. Anyway, it's just, the love is there.
Yeah, and you can tell, like, if you have any interactions with Chip, because, again, guy's been around for 20 plus years here, and he has got he's obviously passionate and in love with the beers and the brand that he's built. And you know, any interactions you have with him, you can tell that he is just like, man, he is, and he is proper Texan. Like he's just got the attitude to him and everything. Like real like the hospitality's there and like real cheery, but just like, man, you get the feeling that like, if you say the wrong thing, you're going to piss him off, or you're going to have a nice strong conversation.
Yeah. Well, he's also a UT alum. So
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah. I am also a UT alum, but it's also one of those just like, I don't know, man, I grew out of like, yeah, go local college, just like I graduated and it was just like, cool. Once they started asking me for money, I was just like, you don't matter to me anymore. Like this transaction is done. I gave you money. You gave me paper. Like we're done.
Yeah. We had our thing. Let's just move on. And
yeah,
you know, let's not make it embarrassing.
But I was going to say, let me bring it back to the beard. It's like, but there's a lot of things. I think I started talking at some point about the, like, they just do their thing and they do it well, and they haven't like gone crazy trying to reach out and do all these other things. And from a technical standpoint, there's a lot to be said, excuse me, between the difference of an excellent Hefeweizen and a good Hefeweizen. And that's kind of like, therein lies the rub for much of the beer world. Just, you can make a good IPA. It's not too hard to do. Mm-hmm. Making a great IPA is damn near impossible. Mm-hmm. And Hefeweizens are so fun in that, like, if you think of, you think of beers as, you know, kind of like you got a couple sliders, right? Where you're just going, okay, we got malt flavor, that's one slider. You've got hop character, that's another slider, and then you got yeast character, that's your other slider, and then you got a bunch of little tiny ones, you know, for water chemistry, blah 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 blah. You know, snooze alert. So, Hefeweizen is like all about that yeast slider. Mm-hmm. So much of the character, like I'd reckon, I'm going to do arbitrary percentages, 90% of the flavor and aroma from this beer is all in the yeast. Mm. And yeast handling and the way that you ferment this beer, Hefeweizen in particular, plays a dramatic role in how the final beer comes out. And so if you go to Live Oak now, granted, I haven't been to the new space, I've just seen pictures and kind of cyber stalked them. You know, they do a lot of horizontal fermenters, mm-hmm. and open fermentations, which you don't find typically in the craft beer scene, because frankly, horizontal fermenters are not as flexible as like the standard cylindriconical, the really tall tanks that you see and you go to visit a brewery. They're not as flexible in the styles they can produce. They're harder to clean. They take up more space. There's just a whole bunch of cons against them. But the one thing that they really just kill at is making beers with a high ester, high yeast profile character. And just dropping, I guess, while we're on this, like I'm about to start nerding out on all this stuff. So this is actually one of my favorite like case studies. When I went to brewing school, one of the favorite case studies that we did was a German brewery, mm-hmm. that they expanded, they built a new facility, they built all these cylindriconicals because, you know, hey, they're doing a bunch of lagers. Cylindriconical tanks, you know, the big tall guys, those are great for making lagers. Mm-hmm. Just highly efficient, do all sorts of great stuff with them. And so they decided to invest in that for all of their equipment. And just pop it, dude.
Normally I stick to about a 2-beer show. I knew with Hefeweizen it'd be at least 3, so.
Yeah, I know. I had to, anyway, I was about to get distracted, but I'm not going to.
No.
So case study. Anyway, they built this brand new brewery, you know, big cylindriconical tanks, and they were just switching over. All of our beers are going to go into these tanks. And they started doing their first couple batches. They did their lagers. They were doing just fine. And then they did their Hefeweizen, and it was wrong. Hmm. Like the flavor profile, like the ester profile in particular. So the big like banana fruit notes that you get off of the beer was just wrong. Hmm. And they started doing a bunch of research, you know, doing all sorts of analyses, double checking all their paperwork, blah, blah, blah. And they finally ended up getting a consultant in to try and figure out what was going on. And it turned out that by fermenting in a, like the geometry of the tank, the height of these cylindriconicals relative to the width and everything like that, the hydrostatic pressure, so the volume of beer pushing down on the beer below it, was enough to suppress ester production in that yeast. Mm. So there's all these little variables that impact how yeast behaves in beer. So, you know, you hear things like, you know, it's cold fermented. It's like, well, that's not entirely BS, because the cooler you are, typically the less ester production you get, the warmer, and vice versa. And so one of the big stressors on yeast is pressure. The more pressure you have on there, the more you're going to suppress ester production. And so breweries that have horizontal tanks, there's very little pressure pushing down on the yeast that's in the beer. And the same thing with when you have open fermenters. As the beers are fermenting and they're building up pressure inside the tank, you don't get all that pressure pushing back down on the beer, even if it's, you know, just a little bit to get up over into a blow off. Instead, that pressure just goes straight to the atmosphere via an open fermenter. And so, you know, visiting Live Oak and knowing that they do some open fermenter, I haven't been on their production floor and seen like, okay, how much of this is open fermenting and how much of this is what, but the fact that they still commit to doing brewing this beer this way, mm-hmm. even though, you know, on paper it costs more money. It's not as flexible. You know, there's all these limitations and setbacks, but you know, God dang it, it is the right way to do it. And that's something that, you know, you'd go and try to find a brewery opening up today that says, we're starting off by making continental ales and lagers, and they're probably gonna not drop the money for customized, you know, horizontal fermenting tanks.
Yeah. It's
rant over.
No, that's why I'm so grateful that you're doing these these episodes with me, because one, it would just be me chugging into a microphone. But yeah, you're all the expertise that you bring. I've brewed a Hefeweizen a few times. I haven't brewed in a while. I'm way past due. But when I was in my, you know, like in it, you know, Hefeweizen was one that I think I did pretty good. I enjoyed it. But then I tried to do an open fermentation, just like a gallon of, I put it on top of the fridge a couple weeks later, tasted like sweat socks. And needless to say, I didn't drink any more of that. The open fermentation, so hydrostatic pressure, that sounds super smart. So you say ester fermentation or ester production, from fermentation. Reading, especially when I was back in the day trying to figure out styles, you know, and looking to get like a Cicerone certification or something like that, and really trying to dial in all the technical stuff. Esters versus phenols. What's the proper balance between, say, like clove and banana versus and vanilla? And I even get like a little bit of like circus peanut, almost bubble gum kind of sort of thing going.
Balance ultimately comes down to the brewery, just like what they're trying to, what they're aiming for. There are little things that the brewery can do to really emphasize one character over another. If Live Oak wanted to, like, hey, we really want to emphasize the clove qualities of this beer, you know, there are some things that they could do to suppress ester production by the yeast to allow that clove character to shine through. But to get that clove character to shine through, there's additional things that had to be done on the mash level. Full disclosure, I've never been a professional German Hefeweizen brewer. I've made a handful of wheat beers, but never anything like of this caliber or this consistently. Like, geez, man, I've made like one or two one-offs for like, you know, hey, this is for the tap room. Like, cool. You know, people drink it because it's new and it's gone by the weekend. But in order to get that clove character, you have to have some, it's one of those like facets of brewing that I kind of like, I haven't had to do in a long time. So I've kind of skipped over, but there's a, everyone knows about the sacrification rests of like, okay, you got to, I say everybody, but you know, you got to break down the starches in the grain into sugar so that you can then ferment them out later. In a lot of German breweries, like what they'll do is they'll have a lower temperature rest. It'll be a protein rest, where a different set of enzymes will start working away at some of the longer chain proteins, turning them into, you know, shorter proteins, which do a couple of things. One of which it makes it really aids in that head retention or that head production, that, you know, get these really great heads. Oh, we got, you know, my head's kind of gone. I'm going to give that to the glass and not the beer. So you get that improvement to head retention and head formation. You also get some precursors to that clove character. So you're always going to get a little bit of that produced just in a normal mash, what have you. But in order to really produce enough of the precursor, you really are going to want to do a lower temperature mash to start, and then you'll heat it up, do your starch conversion rest, and then you'll, you know, go about your day. Well, again, in order to have that kind of temperature control of your mash, you got to have a heated mash tun on an industrial scale. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like so many things, like horizontal fermenters, that usually starts sounding an awful lot like money coming from somebody's bank account.
Yeah.
You know, because heated mash tuns are just like, do you need this? No. Does it make better beer? Yes. But do you need it? And when you've got, you're already scrambling for investors, you're just like, nah, mm-hmm. I don't need it. Because again, you can make really good beer, mm-hmm. but that line between good beer and great beer is hard.
Yeah. I'll say this. There might be a strategy, and I'll speak to you about this off recording.
Ooh.
But there may be a strategy for the craft beer industry where instead of going after, you know, I don't know, like beer lovers and then hoping they have money for investment, we should go after really rich people and just turn them on to beer. Because then you can get those heated mash tuns. And I've seen it play out. Anyway, that's a behind the curtain kind of. But it may. Yeah, I don't know. You're right. It's like all that it does. It's like, you know, all of it. It's like a little bit better equipment here, a little bit better. It takes somebody who has all the skill in the world, good ingredients, but then it's just like that extra little bit at the top that just puts it right over. You know, it's like nobody else has this. So it's like, bam. And then you can taste it. And it's worth it.
No, absolutely. And like, you know, I mentioned the, I've mentioned a couple times, like, oh, they're 20 plus years old. Like just the incredulity of it all. I mean, they opened in 97 and they moved into their new facility in 2015. Their old facility was literally, the ceilings were, I think, 10 feet tall.
Yeah.
You literally could not, like, there was a door on the mash tun that in order to open it fully, you had to take the door off because if you opened it, it hit the ceiling.
Uh-huh.
If you walked through the space, it was just this like sprawling, I mean, very clearly the like, hey, in 97, someone decided to open a brewery. Mm-hmm. This was the space they could find. It was a good location at the time, or, you know, for whatever reasons, it was good. And then they were like, well, shit, now we can't move out of it. Okay, we'll add another tank there. Oh God, where are we going to put this new tank? I don't know. Put it there. And so there was it became very clear that they were in this, I don't want to say position, but they were like, we're going to do things right in that we're going to buy the tanks that we're supposed to have. We're going to, you know, not skimp on any of these things. And I guarantee it kind of got into the position that every craft brewery finds themselves in, which is they're sort of chasing their tail going, man, the next thing we need is a canning line. Well, we don't have space for a canning line. Okay, well, where are we going to do this? Well, we don't have the infrastructure for that. Okay, well, we need to then get a new space. We don't have the money for a new space. And you get that catch 22 of we know what we need to do, but we don't have the money, or we don't have the time, or we don't have the space, or we don't have the, I don't know how they financed their new space, if it was all private, if it was, you know, a series of investors or bank loans, whatever. But I can tell you it took years for the whole thing to come together. I can guarantee you that. Mm-hmm. And God willing, Live Oak Brewing isn't going anywhere.
Yeah.
They've established themselves as such an excellent brewery, and perhaps most importantly, as such an excellent Hefeweizen producing brewery, that if that's the only beer they made, I would still tip my hat to them just every time I drink their beer.
Yeah.
And like quite this, we've dubbed this segment required drinking. And I think that is like right there. That's the big like stamp of, that is why Live Oak Brewing is Live Oak Hefeweizen specifically is required mm-hmm. drinking.
Yeah. Yeah. If you hadn't had Live Oak Hefeweizen, you don't know Hefeweizen.
Yeah. That's a bold claim.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Do you like Hefeweizen? Hold on. Have you had Live Oak Hefeweizen? No? Don't answer that question. You don't know.
Yeah.
You don't know. You've got to try this one before you can tell me whether you like the style or not, because it starts here. There's variations. Yeah. There's people that try different approaches. There's been the dry hopped and the different American approaches to everything, right? It's a beautiful thing about American brewers. There's no sacred cows or sacred styles or anything. They'll take it apart, put it back together, add all kind, do all kinds of stuff, right? And it's fun. Love it. But start here. Live Oak, right? Got the sign on my wall for a reason, because
we started this up and I'm just like, oh boy, how apropos.
Check that graphic. Not a graphic. That's 10, bro. That was bought at the brewery.
Yeah. And like and kind of going back to like the dog breed metaphor that I love to play with or to throw out
belly.
There.
Rub that belly. Get it.
It's that, there's nothing, whoever's listening to this, your local brewery, watering hole, you might have your favorite Hefeweizen. Mm-hmm. And, that's fine. You know what? Everybody's got a favorite dog. Mm-hmm. Everybody's got a dog that they prefer. And you know what? It might not be the 10 out of 10 Labrador Retriever. Like, I don't even know what dog breeds are. Golden Retriever. It's not the best. It's not to the letter, but man, it's a really good dog. Mm-hmm. And that is perfectly fine.
Yep.
As long as you understand that there's a dog that is what it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Live Oak or in the Hefeweizen category of dog breeds, I'm just mixing this analogy up. But when it comes down to that beer style, Live Oak Hefeweizen is the top of the list.
Yeah. Agreed. Could not agree more. When they started canning this beer, I believe this was the first beer that they canned. I think it followed closely by with Pils. And,
yeah, I think by Pils and then Big Bark, their amber.
Yes. One, you notice when this beer is on tap. I remember back in the day going to Austin for different things and seeing those actual Live Oak tap handles. I'm like, oh, what is that? I should try that. That Big Bark or whatever it was you'd find out. And, so it's it's just so iconic. The brewery, Chip, the whole thing. This beer, when they started canning this beer, talk about like a step forward for society at large. Like people, you need to understand where we are today compared to where we were just a few short years ago. Things are getting better. And this is one strong piece of evidence. We may have moments where we're like, ah, shit, things are this. What's going on? What are we doing? Hold on. Live Oak Hefeweizen's canning. Oh, they are? Okay.
Yeah.
All right, cool. All right. Yeah. I guess we'll get through this other thing. But we got Live Oak Hefeweizen.
We're still, we might be doing like one step back every now and then, but we're doing three step forwards every now and then.
Yeah, and you can always find the spirit like at your HEB or something.
Oh yeah, no, this is an absolute shelfie in the definition of it, in that it's always there, or at least it always out of my HEB. I mean, your HEB may vary, but. I mean, and that's kind of it to a degree. I mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Josh, but in doing these discussions for required drinking, like I kind of think that they almost all need to be shelfies. Like if it's something that you have to go hunting for, then, I don't know. We can revisit that because I'm sure there's some beers that are like, oh yeah, you got to go looking for, you know.
If this, okay, so that's one of those things, like it's a philosophical question. So things like logic, are they, you know, something like 2 + 2 = 4, right? 2 + 2, I was talking about this with my daughter because as a 13-year-old, she loves to hear her dad talk about logic and philosophy. 2 + 2 = 4, even if the entire physical universe was wiped away and there were no physical beings to, you know, observe what was going on, the principle of 2 + 2 = 4 would never go away. It would still be 2 + 2 = 4. It would never, there's never a time where 2 + 2 = 5. Regardless, that's a pillar of, it's a pillar of just existence. Now, if you were to get in a time machine and go back to, you know, 2010 before Live Oak Hefeweizen was canned, it would still be a required drink. It's still required drinking. You would still have to go to a bar and get it. But we're now in the reality where it's canned and it's there and it's available. You have no excuse. That's what I'm trying to get to, Keenan.
And you know what? That is an excellent point of, yeah, it literally, I think the high in Houston today was 100 plus. That's not even heat index. Mm-hmm. Like, if today's a beautiful day or was a beautiful day for a Hefeweizen, and frankly, we still got another like 2 to 7 months of summer. Like you got no excuse. Just the next time you do your no contact pickup from HEB or Specs or wherever, like throw a 6-pack of Live Oak on there and just destroy it one night.
Mm-hmm. And it is. It's one of those where if you wanted to have it with a salad, like a spinach salad with a little like a lime vinaigrette or not, maybe, I don't know, honey lime, maybe some toasted pecans or walnuts or something.
Oh yeah. The, probably my second favorite cheese pairing with beer.
Yeah.
Is Hefeweizen with fresh mozzarella.
Yes.
Like you get that, like just that creamy milkiness, soft, and then, you know, contrast that with the fresh, like ester, the banana notes, mm-hmm. the mouthfeel, the carbonation kind of cuts through everything. Mm-hmm. The mozzarella, the Hefeweizen are both light enough that it's just kind of like, it's just a snack, man. It's perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that's a pillar of existence as well. Fresh mozzarella, Live Oak Hefeweizen, those perfect beer and cheese pairings. Like, it's like you can't even, like, there's words that don't even justify, like there's no, the words that actually live up to the actual, you know, it's like,
all. It's just, it's a Zen moment of, just where everything's right in the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, I should have sat down and thought of more like Hefeweizen and food pairings. Cause I think we did this last time. We're like, oh, let's talk about eating out and going out to eat and all the other, like,
yeah, I have beer and cheese book around here. Janet, Janet something or other. I don't know where to go. Anyway, that's a good one to grab. Just Amazon beer and cheese. And then also, Stan Hieronymus is, brewing with yeast or, they're brewing with, wheat.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Brewing with wheat. Stan Hieronymus, best beer writer. Cause he writes like, he's a writer and then he loves beer. So it's like, even like for the love of hops, reads like a story.
Yeah.
You get that damn water book and it's like, what?
Anyway. Snooze.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. Water does not get enough love, but it's kind of hard because it's I know it's going to sound, you know what, at the risk of a bad joke, it's just so dry.
Yep. I'm glad you said that because I've made that joke so many times. People are like, don't do it, Josh. Don't do it. Or just do it and get it out of the way. And then you did it. And that's fine. It's good because now it's coming from you. So anyway, I don't remember how long our outro music is. I was going to try to, I should have put the time on there. But anyway, do we have any last words before we wrap this episode? like we said, a succinct 30 minutes at 50.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think if I could, or if I had to wrap it up, or if I had to try and punctuate it, it's Liveoak Hefeweizen makes an excellent Hefeweizen, a superb top of the line Hefeweizen. And you, I would, I'll do fighting words. I will fight you if you think there's a better one in Texas. And it's a style that is, I think, underrepresented and underappreciated. And I think that it's one that is underdiscovered, that people that are out there drinking beer, new to craft beer, or even, you know, you got into craft beer and you went straight to IPAs or straight to big adjunct stouts, or, you know, you know your amber that you like. It's really easy to kind of forget about these yeast forward beers that are just, they bring something to the party that if you didn't know that you were missing it, you wouldn't know what you were missing.
Yeah. Magic moment. All right. I'm going to hit this music. I forget how long it is. We'll see how long it is here. See if I can
do it.
I've been doing enough outros. Hopefully I can make things work here. If I hit it twice. Anyway, 23 seconds. Remember that one. All right, so, ladies and gentlemen, as the back in the day music hits, thank you guys for listening to this episode of Required Drinking. Keenan and I will be in discussion of what's next, so we'll see you next time. For Keenan, I'm Josh. Into Bruce.
Night.
Yeah, we'll have to work on that outro.
Seeing has been a presentation of Stewed Productions.